funding for THINK comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to THINK on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What are the long-term risks of a lonely adolescence? Even socially graceful teenagers feel awkward and uncertain at times, and many who never make it into the in-crowd have plenty of good friends. But as my guest today has discovered, serious social problems in high school often keep students from going on to college, even when they are academically capable. Robert Krosno is professor of sociology and faculty research associate at the Population Research Center at the University of Texas at Austin. His new book is called Fitting In, Standing Out, Navigating the Social Challenges of High School to Get an Education. Rob, welcome to THINK.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
So it's so easy to look back on the trials of high school social life and tell our teenagers, none of this matters, just focus on school. But it turns out the social stuff is every bit as important if we want them to succeed academically.
It sure is. I mean, any teenager will tell you that when they go to school every day, they're thinking more about the social sides of high school and their relationships and all the challenges that they face there than they are about the academic side. And when you have that equation, it means that you have to take the social side seriously as adults, or we're not going to help them get an education. It's one of the flaws with No Child Left Behind. It's all about the academics, and that's not what the whole story is.
For purposes of this discussion, Rob, how do you define kids who don't fit in?
I did it in several ways. I actually, the main way is I just asked them. Mm-hmm. They filled out surveys and I interviewed them, and I asked them to give their feelings about school. So they would say things like, you know, I don't belong here. I don't feel connected to other people here. I'm an outcast here. And so that was one way of it. And then I tried to, within that group, people who said that they didn't fit in, I tried to identify what would cause them to feel that way. And for girls, I found two really big factors. One was that they were obese, mm-hmm. and one was that they were gay. Mm. But for boys, I couldn't really find factors that made them feel that way. So it's still a little mystery to me why boys feel that way. Another interesting thing is that a small but significant minority of kids who really feel like they don't fit in have lots of friends and are actually engaged in lots of social activities. So there's some discrepancy between what they think is going on and what is actually going on. But that doesn't matter, because what they think is going on is what really matters.
It's interesting that girls would suffer more than boys from being obese or being gay. I mean, the obese thing, I suppose, makes sense in that in our society, it is still less socially acceptable for a woman to be very overweight than a man. Is that it?
Yeah, it is. I kind of picked those two things to look at because I thought one would be more important for boys and one would be more important for girls, but I was wrong. Mm. And I think that maybe it doesn't mean that those two things are not related to, you know, to boys feeling isolated or marginalized in school. I think what it is that there's so many different things that could matter for them. These two things are kind of a drop in the bucket, so to speak.
Yeah.
They're two things out of many, whereas with girls, there are fewer things that make them feel that way, but those things are much stronger.
So for kids who are gay, does it make a difference whether they're in or out of the closet?
You know, I don't really know that for sure. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that it does, but there could be lots of reasons for that, because kids who come out of the closet in high school might just be more emotionally healthy anyway, just that they're more confident, more secure in themselves,
because
it's such a daunting thing to do. That could explain that, but I don't know for sure. And kind of one of my guiding principles as a social psychologist is that what real things matter if they have consequences. And so we know that there's lots of kids who might be ostracized for being gay, even though they're not gay.
Mm-hmm.
But the ostracism's still there, and that's what really has an effect.
So you spent a year embedded in an urban Texas high school to get a sense of all this. Talk about the kind of interaction you had with students during that time. Did you also speak with their teachers to get a broader picture of what was going on?
Yeah, let me step back and say that I initially started doing a national-level study where I was analyzing data from 20,000 kids, and I kind of established these broad population patterns, mm-hmm. what was going on, but I was really dissatisfied with that because I just kept on wanting to ask why,
yeah,
you know, and how, and things like that. And so that's when I decided, even though it wasn't really part of my research background, to go in and do a primary study in a high school. And so I spent I spent a lot of time doing observations, just watching students in their natural habitat, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So watching them at lunch and, you know, in sports fields. And then there were 32 kids that I spent more significant time with, where I interviewed them. I went online with them and looked at their web pages and followed them on that. And I talked to not all of their teachers, but many of their teachers. And there's actually a lot of agreement between the teachers and the kids about what was going on in the high school.
So
it was a very eye-opening experience, let me tell you, because I, for example, even though I'm not, you know, I'm was in my early 30s at the time, and I thought I was really in tune with young people, and I realized how old I had gotten once I spent a year in high school.
So it's easy, I was going to say, for the adults to see what's going on, but are they able to help the kids who don't fit in? Sometimes the worst thing, it would seem socially for a kid, is for a teacher to take special interest in view of all the other kids, because then that makes them seem even more different than everybody else.
I totally agree, and that's a struggle we have with intervention, regardless of what the topic is,
uh-huh.
is that sometimes targeting a kid for special help comes with a stigma,
yeah.
or it makes people aware of something that they might not have been aware at. You know, it's a label, and we really, really have to worry about that. And especially when you're dealing with something, for example, like obesity, you know, the effects of obesity on many outcomes are just as, you know, they're just as strong as things like poverty. Even when you take into account, you know, all the what we call confounds, the things that would lead you into obesity and into some negative outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So that at first I thought, well, this is really something we need to target in schools and say, you know, we need to have a, you know, specific interventions for these kids. But then a lot of the teenagers that I talked to said that they would dread being a part of something
yeah.
like that because it would single them out. So it really does place the burden on adults to be sneakier about how we do these things and how we apply services and programs.
What about things like extracurricular activities? And that, you know, I'm thinking in this case of something like a prom, which is supposed to be fun for everybody. Now, any, you know, high schooler can tell you it's fraught with, you know,
yes.
with worry. But, it, you know, no adult administrator sets up something like this to torture kids. But
yeah.
obviously, you know, if we're talking about, you know, gay and obese girls, there's a lot of extra complications that come along with, will I go to the prom? With whom do I go? Will my friends go? Are there things that we're inadvertently doing that make school worse for some kids?
I mean, I think, you know, the way that our high schools are organized is going to create problems like that. You know, there is a certain amount of social status and all of the things that are the way that our high schools run. And for the most part, that's fine. And it can even be good for kids. I do think that there's always going to be a subset that we really have to worry about. So my take isn't that we need to do away with those things. It's that we need to have sort of more supplemental things in place to, you know, to help the kids who might be in trouble. Because we don't want to take away good things for a majority of students. We just want to have them while also taking care of the ones that might suffer in the middle of it. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned extracurricular activities, because one of the things that I did, you know, it was, there were many things about this book that were quite depressing to write about and to think about. So I went to the students in the high school that I was studying, and I asked them, you know, if you, for a kid in this situation, or if you're in this situation, what would make a difference for you? And one of the things that they really talked about was extracurricular activities, that this was a real place that if they could find something that they could do, like a club or a sport or a talent, you know, it was in Austin, so a lot of them were musicians, and they felt like that would be enough to get them through. It would give them something to feel good about themselves and also a way to make friends. And so I actually went back and tested that with the national data, and I found that that was true, that kids who were less likely to feel like they didn't fit in when they were in these groups, these clubs and activities, or they had these talents that they could pursue outside of school. But even if they did feel that they didn't fit in, the kids who were in those clubs and activities didn't have the negative outcomes of not fitting in.
So talk about what you learned about why not fitting in high school socially has anything to do with the decision to go on to college.
So I guess the bottom line is that, you know, that kids who feel like they don't fit in are less likely to go to college after high school, even compared to kids of their same IQ, their same race, their same social background. And there's a really complex chain of events that connects those things. And I guess the best way I could sum it up is to say that teenagers who are in this position spend so much time kind of thinking through and working through what's happening to them and their own feelings about what's happening to them and trying to find ways to make themselves feel better and to protect themselves, mm-hmm. that they spend less time on schoolwork. And so as a consequence, they're less likely to accrue a lot of the academic credentials that a kid needs to go to school nowadays, like, you know, the grades and going into certain classes. So that seems to be the main pathway. It's also true that a lot of the things that kids do to feel better about themselves or their situation really work in the short term. They make them feel good, you know, better, but at the same time, they're really problematic in the long term. And so a good example of that is substance use.
Yeah.
You know, what we call self-medication. They use drinking or pot as self-medication because they feel bad. And that might give them a momentary reprieve from their feelings. But as you might expect, that's really negatively associated with academic outcomes.
Robert Krosno is my guest. He's professor of sociology and faculty research associate at the Population Research Center at UT Austin. His new book is called Fitting In, Standing Out, Navigating the Social Challenges of High School to Get an Education. We'll be back to our conversation with Rob in a couple of minutes. You're welcome to join us now by calling in to 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Jeff Whittington is here with me in studio now. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And we're being told from Pledge Control Central, Jackie Boyer, our producer down there, that we've kind of wandered into that danger zone with the membership campaign, where our guest and the topic is so interesting that you who are tuned to KERA 90.1 right now, you're listening and you're not giving. And we're thrilled that you're listening. We are so thrilled that you're listening, and you're probably getting ready to call in or email in and participate in this show. We know that these are the kinds of topics that you love to talk about and to hear on the Think Show. However, we actually have some business to do. We've got to finish this campaign successfully, and we've got about 115,300. We actually have exactly $115,314 left to raise in the drive, and then it's over. That means that we've raised almost $510,000 because our original goal setting out a couple weeks ago was $625,000. That's what's necessary to keep the station moving forward fiscally at this time. So you can help us make this a successful campaign by going right now to KERA.org and making a contribution or by calling 888-694-6931.
Want to send a big thanks to Roger Latham in Hickory Creek, Susan Clark and Joseph Hames in Carrollton, and Jack Whiteman in Dallas. Really appreciate your support of KERA. You can join these great folks by going online to kera.org or by calling 1-888-694-6931. I'm always curious, Jeff, when we have like a number at the end, like 4. Like how we got to that? Did someone give, you know, $94 or something? I wonder about that.
I don't know. Probably. Or $96.
Well, I think what that shows is that, you know, people really think about what they want to give to public radio and make this contribution.
Yeah, you know? You can decide. I mean, if you want to give $37.17, you can do that. Because you get to decide what this is worth to you. You know, the programming that we bring you on KERA, especially the national programming, costs the station over $1 million a year just for the rights to air it, so that, you know, we pay that to NPR and PRI so that they can go out and produce the shows. But we have to also cover the cost of producing shows like Think right here at KERA. You help pay for 61% of that bill, of every bill that KERA pays, when you call 888-694-6931 or when you contribute online at kera.org.
We know that you can't say KERA is worth nothing to you because you're with us day in and day out, week in and week out, and your time is valuable. If your valuable time is worth spending with KERA, a bit of your money is worth spending with the station as well. Please go online now to kera.org or make a contribution at 1-888-694-6931. Back in just a minute with Rob Krosno.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Summer Youth Programs. Camps in Legos, writing, art, reading, math, and science held at SMU in Plano and on the main campus, Dallas. Learn more at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Robert Krosno. He is a faculty research associate at the Population Research Center at the University of Texas at Austin and author of the new book, Fitting In, Standing Out, Navigating the Social Challenges of High School to Get an Education. Join the conversation by calling in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Rob, how often is the isolation that kids who feel they don't fit in externally imposed, and how often does it have to do with the students feeling that no one's going to understand them and sort of not trying? Are they just constantly harassed, or is it a little more subtle than that?
There's a lot that's really subtle about it. I mean, there are definitely kids out there who are harassed every day, you know, and that is a really difficult situation, and it's a real problem. Then there's this much larger group of kids who are not openly harassed in the hallways, but it's much more subtle, and just the way that people treat them and the things that people say to them, it's kind of what I often refer to as mean girl tactics, though girls aren't the only ones that do it. They're just better at it. And that kind of social challenge is really difficult because a lot of it goes on in your head, and you don't – when you get harassed in the hallways, that's obvious. You know what's happening to it. You know who the enemy is. You know what's going on. This more subtle stuff really gets under your skin because you never really know for sure what people mean or what they think about you. And sometimes teenagers can make it worse in their minds than what's really going on. And that is a much more common experience. And it's just as it's not as dangerous as the more open harassment, but it is just as related to negative outcomes.
So by the time kids are in high school, I'm guessing that a sort of school assembly about treating everybody nicely is only going to get you a lot of sort of sarcastic snorts from the student body.
I don't know. I mean, I think that actually students have heard that so much, they've really taken it to heart. And so there are actually many students, I would say the majority, but certainly not all of them, will actually go out of their way to avoid looking like they're harassing someone or being mean. And that's what leads to all this more subtle social aggression, because people have to be able to plausibly deny that they're doing that, because then other students would think of them badly.
Yeah.
So they have to kind of camouflage it, and they do that.
So we have what's going on academically at school, we have what's going on socially at school, and then we have what's going on at home. How protective how important is a kid's relationship with his or her parents?
I mean, it really is the single most important protective factor, probably. I mean, kids who have really strong connections with their parents, that doesn't necessarily protect them from being in these situations, but it does protect them from the negative consequences of being in those situations. So you might have two kids who both are socially isolated for some reason. One has a strong relationship with her parents and one does not. Well, the first kid is going to do better. That even though they're socially isolated, they're probably still more likely to do well academically and go to college and all those things. There's something about what's going on at home is protecting them from what's happening at school. But when I talk about parents, one thing that I always say is that adults have this kind of collective amnesia, and I'm an adult, so I include myself in this, where, you know, we forget, we remember what high school is like, but we sort of forget how all-encompassing it is and how overwhelming it can be. And so adults, when you talk to them about these things, are often very likely to say things like, you know, that's something, you know, that's hard, but it's something that kids go through. It's part of growing up. It's a rite of passage, and it's what high school is all about, and you live through it. And I would say that's the single most common adult response to this, or parent response to it. And I remember when I was a kid, you know, if something went wrong at school, my parents said the same thing to me, and it drove me crazy. But, you know, I'm a parent now, and I found myself thinking and sometimes saying very similar things to my kids. So I don't know, it's something about adult socialization or the distance from high school that it kind of gets us into that way of thinking. And it's counterproductive. It's not really the best way to look at things.
Well, I wonder if it's a little bit of that amnesia that they say that women get. You know, you don't remember how painful childbirth was. You just can't remember, or else it would never happen.
And I think a lot of it is actually kind of a positive story, in the sense like that even if you had a really bad time of it in high school, you know, most people in the long run do okay. And so they might say, well, I had trouble in high school, but I turned out fine. And that's just kind of the way that adults approach that. And it's, you know, it's kind of dismissive of the way that teenagers feel, even though it's something that I kind of can be guilty of in my own personal life too. But you know, I think that it makes us be less proactive about helping kids. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes us, parents are really good at being reactive when something really goes wrong and stepping in and helping out, but we're less good at the proactive stuff, making sure we never get to that point.
Rob, are parents as good as teachers at really identifying when their own children are socially isolated? You know, you love your kids so much, mm-hmm. you can't imagine that everybody wouldn't just adore them.
I think that that's probably true. I think teachers are pretty astute about mm-hmm. this, and they just have such a better vantage point on things than parents do. So it's more likely to get past parents, especially if the kids aren't being forthcoming about it. So it's a real challenge that parents have to face. They have to really get in there and figure things out.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We'll speak first with Ken in Plano. Hello, Ken.
Yes, hi. I was hoping you could address imagined high school as it's imagined in Hollywood and actual high school. Talk about the differences and talk about those shows for those of us who wish to relive this horrible period of our lives. Talk about which ones capture the apathy and the complexity of those relationships. I'm really curious to know what your answer there is. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
You know, the enduring Hollywood fascination with high schools is inexplicable to me. I mean, it really is true. There's always TV shows, always movies about this sort of stuff. You know, are there ones that are, I mean, most of them are pretty far removed from reality. I think that a show that was filmed here in Austin, Friday Night Lights, is a really good example of a show that gets high school pretty well, about how it's not so dramatic, high school isn't. It's more just about everyday ups and downs that kids go through, as opposed to big tragedies or big epiphanies. It's much more steady. And that can be true of the good side of high school and the bad side of high school, too. I already mentioned this movie once before, but Mean Girls, you know, it's a comedy and it's really over the top. But there is something to be said about the reality that movie is lampooning, about how bullying, you know, physical, but beyond physical aggression, how a lot of what goes on in school that's really difficult for schools is about social relations and double talking to people and talking about people behind their backs and spreading rumors and that sort of stuff. That is a much more challenge for educators and parents than the real open harassment stuff, because that is so much easier to identify and do something about.
You know, Rob, I was in high school in the 80s, and it seemed like the reflections of what that was, at least at the time, always had to do with, you know, the rich kids were really popular and the poorer kids were the ones who were marginalized. And it doesn't look like from your work that that is as large a problem as adults might conceive.
You know, well, for one thing, I mean, our schools, even though our youth population is much more diverse now, the schools aren't necessarily that much more diverse. Mm-hmm. What I did find in this book is that I expected there to be demographic differences in what was going on, and I didn't really find that so much, except for one thing, which is that when we were talking about the risks associated with not fitting in at school and self-image problems and how that affects educational outcomes, that white middle-class girls seem to be the most negatively affected. And white middle-class girls are also the most successful students in American education. So how do you deal with those two things? And the answer is that, yes, they're the most successful students in American education, but they would be even more successful if not for a lot of this other stuff that's dragging them down. Now, I have done other research that I don't talk about in this book about socioeconomically desegregated schools, so schools that are really diverse in terms of economic statuses of parents. And what I do find there is that low-income kids in those schools are more likely to feel like they don't fit in and to feel socially isolated. So that definitely happens. And it's part because social status in high school is linked to social class.
Yeah. And then you have the right clothes, the right shoes,
exactly.
You have a car instead of taking the bus. Yeah,
exactly.
Let's go back to the phones now at 800-933-5372. This time we have Susan on the line in Plano. Hi, Susan.
Hi. How are you guys today?
Great. Thanks.
Hi.
Really enjoying the conversation, and I can't wait to read the book. It seems like a topic that really needs to be explored. But while I've been listening to you talk, the question I have, or I guess the comment, I was an obese teenager like Chris in the 80s, and I had nothing to wear because there was nothing to buy. I had money. I just didn't have any place to shop. And I was in college when Oprah Winfrey started being on TV, and that was really the first fat person on TV. And then Lane Bryant opened, and suddenly I could actually buy jeans. And I guess I'm surprised, just listening to you talk, that it's still so bad for girls. I mean, now the world is fatter, right? And there's lots of shopping options, and the norm has changed a bit. And if you turn on Glee, there's an overweight girl, and there's a lesbian girl storyline. And I went to a parade recently in Plano, and all of the high school cheerleaders and drill teams were there, and there is a lot more body diversity that seems to be acceptable now than there was when I was in high school. So I just wonder, do you have a sense that it's gotten any better or is getting better over time?
So this is kind of one of the great paradoxes, is that it is true that the proportion of Americans who are overweight and the proportion of teenagers who are overweight has gotten much greater over the last 20 years. Like, I graduated from high school in 1990, and since then, I mean, we've had a doubling of those rates. And then also in America at large. And so you would think, based on that there would be more acceptance, right? But what polling data suggests is that the stigma of obesity has gotten worse. Over time. And in part, I think that might be just that we make such a bigger deal of this as a national issue. And so one of the things that I actually talked to the students about was this very point. And I was really interested to find out that a lot of them said that, you know, it's hard for them to turn on TV or, you know, look on the web without seeing something about the obesity epidemic and this national crisis. And all of this stuff, and maybe that is somehow contributing to it. However, I do also think that things have gotten better, and that's not mutually exclusive, because I think that there can be more people who are feeling better about themselves and a greater social stigma at the same time. And, you know, and I think that might be what's happening, is that you have some people who, because of these TV shows and everything else, are able to accept themselves better, even though in their high schools there are more people there who are disparaging of obesity. I know that seems counterintuitive, but I do think that's true. And another thing that I talked to girls about was the media, and exactly like what we're talking about, how there is greater representation of overweight girls and more diversity in body sizes on TV, less so in magazines, but definitely on TV and movies. And the girls said that they actually were somewhat resentful of the media because they felt that there was a mixed message, that, you know, they were constantly bombarded with these messages of embrace yourself and accept who you are, but at the same time, the vast majority of people that they see on TV and movies, regardless of the change, are of a certain body type. And so they felt like they were getting, you know, very mixed messages, and they were really resentful. So I think that's disappointing and sad on one level, but at the same time, it shows that girls are a lot savvier than we probably give them credit for.
Robert Krosno is my guest. His new book is called Fitting In, Standing Out, Navigating the Social Challenges of High School to Get an Education. We'll talk more to Rob in a minute. If you would like to receive a copy of his new book, Fitting In, Standing Out, we have it available today when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level. You can do that by going online to kera.org or by calling 1-888-694-6931. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris, and hello to you. Again, the number 888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org, and we do have Fitting In, Standing Out, Navigating the Social Challenges of High School to Get an Education by Robert Krosno. It's available, as Chris said, at the $120 membership level. That's right around the average gift, and as I mentioned earlier, if we just heard from about 1,100 of you at a $100 level or so, this drive would be over and done with and successfully concluded. Of course, we're going to get there one call or one online contribution at a time. We are now under $115,000 left to raise. So thanks so much to each of you who has called, each of you who has contributed online. We do this one contribution at a time, but you're not alone. When you contribute to the station, you're joining thousands of people just during this drive alone who have stood up and said, I want KERA to succeed. If you feel that way, well, trust those instincts and make that call or make that online gift at KERA.org.
Your contribution right now supports all the programming that you hear on this station and allows us to bring it to you every single day. It makes a special statement if you are a particular fan of Think. It says, yes, I love Think, and I want to make sure that it's here, and I like being able to tune in every day at lunch. We know some of you sort of schedule whatever errands you might have around the hours of the show. We love that. We know that there are others of you who time shift and do all of this through the podcast. We also really appreciate the contributions that come in from podcast listeners, some of whom do not live in the North Texas broadcast area, but still feel really strongly about the quality of this program and about public radio in general. Your contribution helps to make you part of the team that makes Think possible, that makes KERA possible. You can make your financial gift at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931.
It is your public radio station. There are many public radio stations all over the country, and while we do get an occasional gift from the D.C. area or the L.A. area or Seattle or even New York, someone who loves the way that KERA sounds, we're counting on you. As I said, there are hundreds of public radio stations around the country, but this one is yours. This is your public radio station. It's up to you to help ensure that it stays financially healthy and secure so that we can continue to bring you shows like Think every day. We can continue to bring you the other shows that you listen to here on KERA. Everything you hear on the station, though, has a cost, and we've got to meet that cost somehow. The most efficient and effective way to do that, and actually it's part of our license, is to ask you to contribute. So won't you do your part right now? Online at KERA.org.
You've been sampling the station all this time. We know that you are really a fan, that you listen all the time. Maybe public radio is always on when you're in your car or when you're cooking in the afternoons or something. Your support allows us to continue bringing you this programming and perhaps to let someone else sample down the road who will also become a supporting member of this station. We really appreciate your contributions now. Online at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931. Remember, at or above the $120 level this afternoon, you can choose a copy of Rob Krosno's new book, Fitting In, Standing Out.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's summer youth programs. Camps in Legos, writing, art, reading, math, and science held at SMU in Plano and on the main campus, Dallas. Learn more at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Robert Krosno. He is a faculty research associate at the Population Research Center at UT, also professor of sociology there. His new book is called Fitting In, Standing Out, Navigating the Social Challenges of High School to Get an Education. Back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372, and we have Jesse on the line in Rockwall. Hello, Jesse.
Hi. First of all, thanks very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I love, love, love Think. This is a wonderful topic. Thank you, Mr. Krosno, for looking into this and writing a book about it. I just have one question and then a little commercial comment. First of all, my question is, I'm wondering how many of these kids, if you even had an opportunity to find this information out, how many of these kids were struggling with depression, because I know from my own experience that depression has a huge impact on how you're perceiving your environment. Things may be perceived more negatively, or people's intentions may be misconstrued and that sort of thing. Not to suggest that this isn't actually happening to these kids, but depression can make it just that much worse. So that's my question. I would really appreciate some insight on that. And then I just want to say that I am a member of KERA, and I became a member because I listen to KERA every day when I'm in my vehicle, and there is not a single program that isn't certainly entertaining, thought-provoking, and engaging. So thank you for what you do, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks so much, Jess. You really appreciate all of that. So what about the question, Rob, about whether kids are perceiving their world accurately?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I did, I mentioned this earlier about how the single kind of most important mechanism linking these feelings to college attendance were grades and course taking. Well, I also tried to identify what linked these feelings to grades and course taking, and depression was actually one of the things that really mattered. I already mentioned substance use was one of them, but depression was one of the other ones. And what the caller said is actually very true, that one of the horrifying things about depression is that it colors the whole way that you look at the world and yourself. And I'm not saying that people who are depressed are divorced from reality by any means, but they are more likely to see things through a more negative and pessimistic prism. And that is really problematic, especially when you consider what I was talking about before, how a lot of what goes on in the social side of school is more subtle or covert. So they might be more likely to infer threats than other people. At the same time, depression, another insidious thing about it is that it makes it very difficult to motivate yourself to change things. And so that kids who are depressed are more likely to feel like things will never change and that there's really nothing that they can do about it and that they don't really have control of their lives. And that is really, that can be really difficult for them and their parents in trying to identify ways to help them out of it. Because a lot of what we do is not try to affect the social situation, but affect how the social situation shapes your life. And that's where depression really comes into play.
I thought it was really interesting. You know, I think many of us as adults, again, removed from high school, would assume that if kids are having problems fitting in, a huge source of the problem is obviously the other kids. But in fact, you found that peers are just as likely to be helpful as hurtful to these students who are struggling.
So, yeah, I think I mentioned this earlier about how one of the single most, you know, positive things that a kid in this situation can have is our close parents. Well, actually, even more than that is having close friends. And that seems kind of counterintuitive because, you know, peers, the peer context is what's causing all the problems, but yet the peer context is also the primary source of protection in these situations. And so the way that I think about it is, you know, a lot of these high schools that kids go to today are huge. I mean, they're just enormous. And there's a lot going on there. That's probably one of the reasons why kids are more vulnerable now than they used to be. But within that world, if you can find your niche, you know, if you can find a couple of friends, if you can find your home base, then you're going to be in a much better situation. And that it seems like having that kind of intimate circle can protect you from what's going on in the larger band of peers in the high school.
One thing that always terrifies parents is that students who are struggling socially suddenly throw themselves passionately into a relationship with a boyfriend or girlfriend. Is that helpful or hurtful?
That's a really tricky question. In general, we know that, you know, not based on this book, but the social science research from sociology and psychology, that teen romantic relationships and, you know, during adolescence can be quite difficult and maybe not so conducive to good mental health for girls and boys for completely different reasons. But so that, you know, that is a very longstanding and consistent finding. At the same time, one thing I found out is that girls who really felt like they didn't fit in often did better if they did have a boyfriend. Not so much if they were dating, you know, out there on the market, but if they actually had a stable relationship, they did a lot better. And part of me was actually upset to find that, you know, mm-hmm. And I didn't know if saying it would give the wrong message, but it is true. So in general, having boyfriends or girlfriends isn't the greatest thing for teenagers, but in this particular situation, it might be.
Let's go back to the phones now, 800-933-5372. Jennifer's on the line in Denton. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, Chris. I love the show.
Thanks.
You're one of the reasons that I started listening to NPR.
Thank you.
But I just have a quick question. Does your guest think that, in like nowadays that kids have gotten meaner? I found that like I had a really tough time in school with, you know, the mean kids and stuff like that. And, I have a younger brother in school as well. And it seems like they've gotten harsher, and I'd just like to hear his input on that.
What do you think, Rob?
Well, first of all, I want to say that all these callers are calling in from Denton and Plano, and it really brings me back because I went to high school in Wichita Falls, and I used to have to go to all these high schools when I was younger. So there's something very appropriate about all the callers coming in today. But I definitely – it's hard to say – it's hard to know how to answer that. You know, I think that kids have always been kind of mean, and that has always been – bullying has always been around. But I do think that the context has changed – that it is a more serious issue now. And there's lots of reasons for that. And I think that, you know, one of them just is the fact that there's just so many more kids today and schools are so much bigger that sort of seems to make kids vulnerable in a way that smaller schools don't. But at the same time, we have this whole thing that I haven't mentioned yet, but which is the Internet. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Internet is definitely a forum that allows kids to be meaner to each other. It also is a forum that allows kids to find people to make connections with, which is great. But there's definitely a dark side to it, and it really gives anonymity to social aggression. And, you know, so that it allows people to be mean without getting caught in a way that, you know, has just never happened before. And adults don't really understand that, and they don't really get it, and including me for a long time. And I think that that is really the million-dollar question. It's, you know, it's not so much that kids, you know, internally have become meaner. It's they now have the perfect forum to be mean and not get caught for it. And, you know, it is true that I think that there's evidence that suggests that the majority of bullying-type stuff actually looks fairly traditional. You know, it's just the way that happened in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s. But there is this growing problem. And, of course, this is the problem that's been reported in the media a lot in terms of a lot of high-profile suicide. So I definitely think that that is a legitimate thing to discuss.
Does it make sense for parents to consider switching their child to a different school?
You know, I've had people ask me that before, and, you know, it's hard for me to answer that because so many people don't really have the ability to switch their kids out of school. I think that for those that have the ability to do that, it is something to consider if it gets bad enough. Because, you know, one thing that adults do, and, I am totally guilty of this too, is that we kind of think that things will blow over.
Yeah.
You know, things will get better. And sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. And it's sort of a gamble whether you should act and possibly act too hastily, or whether you should not act and possibly let something really bad happen. And that is, you know, that really comes down to an individual basis and what the circumstances are.
Robert Krosno is professor of sociology and faculty research associate at the Population Research Center at the University of Texas at Austin. His new book is called Fitting In, Standing Out, Navigating the Social Challenges of High School to Get an Education. Rob, it's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And I do want to tell all the listeners to pledge.
Thank you. We appreciate that, too. We appreciate all of you who have been pledging over the past 2 hours of Think, and those of you who have been listening to the show and interacting with the show. We do this for you, and we are really proud to know that you give us the money to make it possible, give KERA the money to make it possible to produce the show every single day. Thank you so much to Julia Yusufinia in Dallas, Seth Ross in Denton, Pierrette Gordon in Dallas. We are down to $114,729 left to raise. Your contribution now will take us that much closer.
We're getting a lot of calls and online contributions for Robert Krosno's book, Fitting In, Standing Out, Navigating the Social Challenges of High School to Get an Education. What a great hour. And that's just the kind of, and we do a lot of shows on these kinds of topics, Chris, whether it's education or identity with young people or, you know, the younger people maturing later or at least moving out of the house later. We've covered all these different aspects of the next generation, the generation that's coming of age right now. And, you know, it's important stuff. And you get a lot out of it. You appreciate it. You call in. You thank us for the show. You participate in the show. And right now, we're asking that you help pay for the show. And if you can give a $120 or above contribution today, we'll be happy to thank you with your very own copy of Robert Krosno's book, Fitting In, Standing Out.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to KERA.org. You know, some of the books, Jeff, that we talk about on the show, some of the topics that we talk about, the guests will sort of make the circuit. And I'm sure that there's a publicity schedule attached to Rob Krosno's promotion of the book. But this is not a huge book that will be all over everywhere. This might be the only place where you've heard about this book. And now you want to read it. We try to bring you things that you will want to explore on your own. We're aware that even with the amazing ability to do an hour at a time per topic, we can't cover everything. And so often, I think what you hear about on this station sort of sets you off on a course to do your own research. I think that's really cool. And we know that a lot of you appreciate it. We would ask that you make a gift in support of that, in support of a station that values your intelligence and wants to give you a lot of interesting things to consider and add to your body of knowledge.
Yeah, the idea is from the producer's chair over here is that, we want you to be able to go further, to learn more, to interact more with a guest. That's why we try to get guests who are coming to town on either in studio or on the phone somehow or remotely through another studio before they're here, so that if you hear something that's intriguing, you can go either that evening or the next week and see the guest speak. We try to do that with academics or conference attendees who are coming to town for conferences or meetings, so that you can have an opportunity to learn more. And of course, every author or journalist or filmmaker that we talk to or actor that we talk to has a body of work out there that you are welcome to explore. That's what public radio is all about. That's what Think Especially is all about. It's about connecting you with these ideas and these other people's thoughts and their processes and what's going on in the world. So we're thrilled to do it every day. We know that you're thrilled to listen. We're thrilled that you listen. But today we're asking that you become more than just a listener to the show. Actually support the show with a financial contribution online at kera.org, or please call 1-888-694-6931.
Remember, make a contribution at or above the $120 level this afternoon, and we can send you a copy of Robert Krosno's new book, Fitting In, Standing Out, Navigating the Social Challenges of High School to Get an Education. I think this book is of interest not only to parents, but anybody who works with kids, anybody who, even if you're a camp counselor, it's good to sort of understand how all of this works and to keep an eye out. You know, as adults, we all want to sort of protect teenagers, and we know how tough this time can be. It's a great perspective to have. Your $120 contribution, of course, is not simply buying a copy of the book, but it is also supporting this radio station that explores topics that, you will not hear. I should probably say you will never hear, but you can never say never. We won't probably do a show on, fashion for teenagers, because that's covered elsewhere. We probably won't do a show on, some of the more lighter things. Right now, Jeff's plotting something
I'm
about
making a list.
Teens who get tattoos of cartoon characters.
I do like to put stuff in Chris's stack.
we call
just
them
to see if she's still, just to see if she's still paying attention.
Yeah, he puts them out there and then just waits to see me write the note back saying, what are you kidding me? What are you thinking? But those don't get on the air because we work as a team to sort of bring you the best content. Anyway, we try to cover the things that you won't hear, on other stations in North Texas, because we know that you can hear them elsewhere. We're really proud of being able to bring you this. We are so grateful to have you as an audience, but we really do sincerely rely on your financial support to keep all of this content coming.
888-694-6931. Online at kera.org. I probably do have a Fashion for Teenagers pitch in my email inbox, maybe three or four of them for topics. So, there's a lot out there.
Skateboarding and bulldogs.
There's a lot out there that's going on, and we make our best effort to make sure that, there's something substantive on this show every day. And if you appreciate that, if you like the show, if you like 90.1 KERA Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, online at kera.org, the radio and media outfit that you're tuned to right now, well, then make a tax-deductible, affordable gift of support and help us successfully conclude this membership campaign. Just over $114,000 left to raise. We could do that today. We could do it today and tomorrow. We could do it today and tomorrow and on Thursday, but it's up to you. It's in your hands right now. Your call, your online contribution will help us successfully conclude the membership drive that much sooner.
If you would rather shift to 24 hours of content free of fundraising breaks, you have to call or go online today and make your contribution. That's how it works. You know, as soon as we raise the money that KERA needs in order to continue, then we will stop, move out of fundraising mode and into full program mode, which we know that you enjoy. But we also know that you understand that we have to raise money from you in order to provide you with the programming that you love so much. We would like to hear from you now online at kera.org, where you can choose a copy of Robert Krosno's book, Fitting In, Standing Out. You can also make your contribution at 1-888-694-6931. We really appreciate your support. Thank you.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.